Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. Don't be taking any of Rosenberg's garbage, Michael and Donnie. The Michael K. Show starts right now.
Thank you, Roman, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday, March 14th, 2022. You know, we say this a lot, and today it really rings true. We don't have enough time. 4 hours just does not do it justice, but we'll do the best that we can. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're together for the next 4 hours, the other 20. That is your responsibility. I mean, what a day. When Tom Brady decides to come out of retirement after 40 days and 40 nights, and that's not even the lead, because here in New York, the lead would be the New York Yankees making moves and having moves made against them. Last night, they shocked their fan base by trading Gary Sanchez and Gio Urshela. They traded those two to the Minnesota Twins, and they got back Josh Donaldson and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. And that's where we stand right now. And also a catcher. His name is Ben Rotvet, and in all likelihood, he's gonna actually platoon with Kyle Higashioka to be a lefty-righty platoon, and we'll see exactly how that goes. They're not gonna hit much, but they are very, very good defensively. But the main guy in the deal is Josh Donaldson. The Yankees will owe him $50 million over the next 2 years, so averages out to $25 million a year. Although this year he's making $22 million. Now, when you look at that and you realize that by trading Gary, who's going to make $9 million, and Gio, who's going to make $6 million, Yankees added $7 million on their payroll with Donaldson. Now, Kiner-Falefa also makes some money, but the Yankees didn't just add money without subtracting money. But I will tell you this, everybody, and I'll be totally honest, I don't think the work is done. They've got a lot of awkward situations and a lot of situations where who's going to play first base, where is DJ LeMahieu going to play? But we'll get into all of that, and we'll break it down. And the other thing that happened with the Yankees, and this is kind of disappointing for me, Don and Peter, because I really thought that Matt Olson would have been a perfect fit for the Yankees. Matinee looks, left-handed swing, outstanding first baseman. But the Athletics decided to trade him to the Atlanta Braves for four of their Atlanta Braves top 13 prospects, and that's where we are right now. Yankees looking for a first baseman. They do have Luke Voit, but if they stay with Voit.
Oh, no. Well, go ahead, Don.
Here, we're going to hear from Yankee Nation. It sounds like it's getting panned, Peter, by a lot of Yankee fans, because this is a deal in which you now have to put your trust in Brian Cashman. Mm-hmm. And fans don't have trust in Brian Cashman. If you go out and sign Correa, leave the Astros stuff out of it for a second.
Okay.
You go out and you get Correa, you go out and get Story. All right, you sink your teeth into that, you look at the back of the baseball card. That's what you're getting, all right? But you bring IKF in, he's got a gold glove, can play third. So if Volpe does get called up, you can move him to third. If Josh Donaldson gets hurt, which is a problem with Donaldson, he's going to be 30. He's 36 years old and has been injury prone over the last half of a decade. But it all comes down to trusting that Volpe is going to be the next Derek Jeter. Trusting that Josh Donaldson stays healthy. So there's that trust. Where, Peter, if you go out and sign the free agent, what's the trust? You just look at the back of the baseball card. But now you're going to have to kind of hope that, let's face it, a player that a lot of guys aren't familiar with at shortstop, and then hoping that eventually Volpe gets called up and becomes your next Derek Jeter, that's hoping that Brian Cashman got it right. And I think that's why a lot of Yankee fans look at this and not really sure if they can completely fall in love with it.
Right, and by the way, go ahead, Michael.
No, you go, Peter.
No, and I think we have to factor in addition to, you know,
Donaldson's age, you know, some level of, you know, lack of familiarity with IK. You also have losing Gio Urshela, who is one of the players that people here have grown fond of. You know, we just talked about him last week, the endearing text that he sent to Michael last week about returning to baseball. So, yeah, this is a little bit more on Brian Cashman to show something than it would be to sign just a huge name out there.
Well, you know, what this does, the couple of moves that the Yankees have made, we'll start with Donaldson, right? Donaldson has an edge, and that's a nice way to put it. The Yankees, as a team, have not had an edge. They have simply not had an edge. And this guy will rub people the wrong way. That he will rub people, he will rub people in his clubhouse the wrong way. And I think they need that. So this is a team that's heavily into analytics, and I think they've always shied away from chemistry because you can't really quantify chemistry. You can't put a number on it. But the fact that they acquire a guy like Donaldson, and when Brian Cashman spoke about an hour ago, and he pretty much said he has an edge. So they took note of that. They need that on that team. The Yankees are very likable, good guys. But is there anybody that's going to get in your face in the clubhouse? I think Donaldson will. And if they bring back Rizzo also a really good clubhouse guy. And I think that that's going to be gigantic as well. They finally decided, you know what? Chemistry and what you do in that clubhouse matters. We can't put a number on it, but we know it matters. So Donaldson, the first step. Now, there's a danger with Donaldson, too, everybody. Donaldson said some really bad things about Gerrit Cole. He's the one who called him out on the sticky stuff and said it in a really bad way. Now, Cole kind of got some revenge. The first game that they faced each other, I think he struck him out three times. But the Yankees knew that was an issue, and the two of them spoke today. And the word is that Cole said it was a good convo. And I laugh, though, when you – I've been reading Yankee Twitter since last night when the deal came down. And the essential thing is, how could they do that? You know, Cole doesn't like him. Why would they upset the apple cart? Well, maybe, A, they want to upset the apple cart. And, B, I guess people forget when the Yankees acquired Roger Clemens in 1999, they hated him. His teammates despised him. He sent Derek Jeter to the hospital. He always hit them to the point that when he pitched his first batting practice at spring training, they all came up wearing catcher's gear and helmets and masks. So that kind of diffused the situation. Here's the bottom line, everybody that's worried about this. If Josh Donaldson plays well and Gerrit Cole pitches well, doesn't matter. You don't have to like each other in baseball. It's not like in basketball where you have to get assists and you depend on everybody else. If a pitcher goes out there and strikes out 27 guys, you can help your team win. If a hitter goes out and gets four hits and makes all the plays in the field, going to help his team win whether they like him or not. That's it. That's the way the Yankees are looking at it, I guess.
Michael, they don't even have to cross paths during the course of the season. There's no need for chemistry between a third baseman and a guy that pitches every fifth day. All right, so listen, if this had been Cole's catcher, if this had been somebody that was also a part of the rotation or something, then maybe you can make a big thing out of it. It's not, believe me, it's not enough not to make the deal. You want to be concerned about Josh Donaldson, be concerned about the fact that every other year he seemed to have gotten hurt here later in his career. But listen, they've got an insurance policy for that, right? Because the feeling seems to be, and when you had exited, Michael, I had mentioned, this to me is about Volpe and them not willing to give him up. That's why they lost out on Olsen. So eventually, yep. I think he's going to become your shortstop. Donaldson's gone after this year, all right? And who knows? If he gets hurt, then you can move IKF over to third base, I guess, or you still have LeMahieu, and then you've got Volpe to come up and play shortstop. So to me, looking at this deal, obviously, how much better are they? I'm going to assume Rizzo re-signs at first base just for sake of argument. You know, are you that much better than you are last year? I guess it'll depend on whether Donaldson stays healthy. But eventually, this is all going to get graded on the kid that gets called up to play shortstop. And will that work out for them?
By acquiring Kiner Falefa, what you've done is you've doubled down on either Volpe or Peraza being your shortstop in the next year or so. Now, there was an outside chance that Carlos Correa could have been signed for a short-term deal. And this is an interesting sidebar on that. So Carlos Correa got I think he had his agents with the William Morris agency. And during the lockout, he got rid of them, fired them, and hired Scott Boras. Now, obviously, the William Morris Agency, before the lockout on December 2nd, they were negotiating with teams on behalf of Carlos Correa. So if, in fact, he signs a 10-year deal now, right, that would mean that the William Morris Agency still has a claim on the commission because they laid the groundwork for deals. Now, the way and so Scott Boras would only get a fraction of what he would normally get. If he signs a one-year deal, and, you know, Kenny Rosenthal in The Athletic wrote that Correa might sign a $45 million deal with the Astros for 1 year. And then he'll enter their free agent market next year without all these shortstops at the age of 28. And that means that if they sign a 10-year deal next year, Scott Boras gets the whole kit and caboodle because William Morris cannot claim that they negotiated on his behalf for next year's 10-year deal. But the one-year deal, yeah, they could. So I guess this is a roundabout way of saying the Yankees could have gone that route as well. If Correa was willing to accept a one-year deal, you get him for the 1 year, let him go out, play great, then re-enter the market, and if Volpe's ready, then you bring up Volpe. Now, you do run the risk of Correa being great, and then the fans are going to clamor for him, but that was one way they could go. But with kind of Falefa, they're getting a player that is a good defender. He's a hitter who hits about 270. He doesn't hit for home runs. I think he had 8 home runs. He's not a guy who's going to hit a lot of home runs. Here's my one concern with the way the Yankees are presently constituted. If you have a catching platoon of Higashioka and Rortvedt, right, you're not going to get an average much higher than 200. You might get some home runs, but you're going to get extraordinary defense behind the plate. And the Yankees knew that Gary struggled defensively. And with Kanafalefa, you're not going to get a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs or 38 the way Torres did 1 year. You're going to get a guy who's about 270, makes all the plays, good range, good hands, good arm, good guy, but he's not going to hit home runs. So this is one of these times that the Yankees are valuing defense. And Brian Cashman said something that surprised me a little bit. He said Donaldson's better overall, including defensively, than Gio. Now, Gio Urshela, we watched him, and we loved how he played defense, and we thought it was great, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at his statistics and his analytics statistics, he doesn't rate as a great third baseman.
Well, I think his WAR last year was a .6
right,
to Donaldson's 3.2.
Right, and kind of Falefa's WAR was like 3.5, and the Yankees really didn't have a shortstop last year other than Torres, and Torres didn't have a good year, so his WAR wasn't high either. So for a team that's bent on analytics, they gained WAR, and they gained better defense. So at three positions, they feel they've improved themselves defensively. Three. So kind of Falefa is much better than Torres was, who played the majority of the year at short. I think it's a little bit of a toss-up between Donaldson and Gio Urshela. The Yankees think that Donaldson's better. Now, Donaldson used to be an outstanding third baseman, one-time MVP, by the way, and he's dropped down a little bit defensively. He's 36 years old, and Higashioka, every pitcher on the Yankees would much rather pitch to Higashioka than Gary Sanchez. And one other thing, because I know people are lined up and they want to talk about all of this. A couple of Yankee people told me, and this was a couple of weeks ago, the outside noise got to Sanchez. Everything he did wrong behind the plate was magnified and amplified by Yankee fans. They went absolutely nuts. And that trickled into the clubhouse, which trickled to Gary, which further affected his defense and obviously affected his offense. So I think the only way the Yankees were staying with Gary was if they felt they had no other option. And before the lockout, they didn't see a better option. But with this deal, a lot of teams like Rotfeld. Andy Martino reported earlier today that the Mets were looking to make a trade for him middle of the year last year. He's very good defensively. He's a left-handed bat. He hit in the 100s in limited time with the Twins last year and hit 3 home runs. But he's supposedly a superb defender. Remember, the Yankee catching instructor who they really lean on is Tanner Swanson. Tanner Swanson comes from the Minnesota Twins, obviously has first-hand knowledge of Ben Rotfeld, and we'll see exactly if this kid can play up in the big leagues. Right now, there's a platoon at the plate. Both guys very good defensively, both guys questionable offensively, but they do provide some power. One other thing, Don and Peter, what have we done over the last couple of years on this air? I mean, remember the what was his name?
Gil
from Bensonhurst, right? all we've heard about is how this fan base hates Gary Sanchez. And if this,
this is Gil.
Right. If this proves anything, you can't really listen to the noise because there's noise on the other side, too. So today, it's like they traded Thurman Munson. So where were these people when everybody's killing Gary Sanchez now? How could you? I love Gary. How could you give up on him? That's not what we heard for 3 years, Don. Am I right? All we heard was Gary Sanchez hate. Now today, he gets traded last night. Now it's as if they traded one of the Yankees' greatest catchers ever. Well, I don't get people.
Well, again, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, it's just the lack of trust this fan base has in Brian Cashman. They just don't like Brian. So they're going to find a reason to criticize him. Because I look at this deal, and to me, it's a good deal for both sides, all right? Is it earth-shattering to me? Does this win the Yankees the championship? No, I think it's a nice move. But if you go out and get Correa or Story, there's a back of a baseball card you could sink your teeth into. There's a lot of unknown. There's a lot of hope with this deal that it works out for a fan base that right now doesn't trust Brian. So I think they're kind of just upset that we were told that this was supposed to be the second coming and to be patient and to shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Sanchez is good. And now Sanchez is gone. So you're right. You get rhetoric from both sides. You don't believe anything. Because all of a sudden he became expendable, where 5 minutes ago you felt like they were twisting themselves into a pretzel to defend the next coming of Thurman Munson.
It's amazing. Yankee Twitter is an amazing place. I mean, you got to get in and you got to get out. You can't stay in there too long because your head will spin.
Before they made the deal,
Don, you could not imagine the amount of hate I was getting. You said there's going to be a baseball bacchanal, and then just killing the Yankees. Hello, are you awake? Meanwhile, not one big name had come off the free agent market. No one was traded. But boy, the impatience! Like the Yankees don't know that the clock is ticking. But you know, fans are fans. But I think you're right, Don. I don't think they trust much in Brian. So the fact that the Yankees were behind the scenes doing stuff and paddling furiously, they wanted instant results. Meanwhile, no one was doing anything of any import. Last night it happened. Today it's intensifying. And I personally don't think the Yankees are done. One thing that Aaron Boone said yesterday, even before the trade was made, and maybe he was doing this for cover guys, but he said, we're good enough to win right now. No, they weren't. They weren't good enough to win the way they were constituted. They just weren't. They didn't even have a shortstop. They're going to have to play Gio Urshel at shortstop. So they were not at all ready to win. And I still think there are moves to be made. Rizzo, I still think, is an outside possibility. I don't think his value is as high as they want it to be. Gleyber Torres could be moved, and then you just slide DJ LeMahieu to second base. These are things that are still out there. They still need, I think, a backup center fielder. So their work is not done. And I think that Brian still might be fishing for a catcher that can hit. We shall see. But you can't judge this deal until everything else is finished. And I think you said it well, Don. The key to this deal is that you've got to get Donaldson at least playing 140 games.
Right. If he ends up having one of those, you know, where he plays like 75 games, you know, you've got an issue. And it seems like every other year with him. But when he's on and he plays, he's good. He's outstanding, judged by, you know, his WAR being almost three more than Gio last year. And it kind of stinks, too. We just heard from him, right, Peter? He texted the show last week.
Yeah.
And I'm going to miss him. He's a good player. But you know, when you talk about prospects coming up and there's two young shortstops that the Yankees did not want to part ways with, but even that kind of hurts Brian with the fan base because what happened to Bird? What happened to Frazier? Eventually, what happened to Sanchez? Outside of Judge, Michael, there hasn't been a lot of prospects we've heard about that have really panned out with the Yankees in recent years.
Nope.
So you're feeling like, are we being led now again where we're being told, this is going to be the second coming and we can't move them and we're going to have to pass on a lot of good possible trades because we don't want to lose them, and then he turns out to be nothing.
Well, what they've done, unfortunately for them, is they've held on to guys to the point that they no longer have value. Gary Sanchez, if you traded him 3 years ago, you could have gotten a truckload more than you got now. Same thing with Gleyber Torres. Gleyber Torres hit 38 home runs. If you got rid of him then, why would you? I don't know if there's much value there now. And they've done this repeatedly. They've done it repeatedly with players. So, I mean, sometimes you got to judge your own players better than other people. And they fell in love with Gary Sanchez, but the outside noise got to Gary. And he was no matter how they spun it and all the analytics they showed us, Gary was not a good defensive catcher. He wasn't. He had a very good arm. But when your best pitcher does not want to throw to him, that's problematic. Your number one catcher means that means he can't catch the first game of the season and can't catch the first game of the postseason. And, your number one pitcher doesn't want to pitch to him.
And in fairness to Brian, Michael, when you look at what happened with Sanchez, the guy that dropped the ball was Sanchez. I mean, you understand organizations trying to find ways to spin a positive because they were probably looking to try to deal him, you know, in the right deal as things were beginning to fall apart. But, you know, this is a guy when he's called up in 2016, looked like he was going to be a special player. And they really, because he had shown it. So they were just trying to spin as positive as possible. But, you know, Gary just didn't live up to the expectations. That's on him. And if he allowed the outside noise to get to him, Michael, then maybe leaving New York and going to Minnesota is the best thing that can happen to him.
Here is a statement from Gio that I received. I want to take this time to thank all the great Yankee fans who made my time there just unbelievable. I especially want to thank the children of the Bronx who I had a very special relationship with. I will miss them very much. Being a Yankee made my dream come true. Boy, he tears at your heart, I'll tell you that. He tears at your heart. He was a good guy, and he did a lot of charitable work off the field. He really did. He met with kids. He met with organizations, and a lot of it didn't go publicized, but he did it because he wanted to do it. Now he's got an opportunity. Let's see what he does in Minnesota. And for Gary, it's not a very friendly ballpark, Target Field, for a right-handed hitter, but his power, I think, can outlast any size ballpark. We'll see. We'll see exactly how he does. But this is his chance, guys. This is the final year of his contract before he becomes a free agent. So he either puts up big numbers and signs a deal that, you know, could really take care of him for a while, or he becomes one of these guys that's going to bounce around. You know, $2 million deal here, $3 million deal here. If he hits 35 home runs for the Twins, you know, all of a sudden you can get a pretty nice contract. Get a pretty nice contract.
Well, maybe, Michael, if it was New York and the outside noise, maybe this can be a Sonny Gray situation, right, where he just leaving, going to a smaller market, less press, less scrutiny, can allow him to flourish and become a better player.
Here's Buster Olney. He was on with KJM this morning, and he explained why the Yankees made this deal.
To upgrade their defense. You know, they upgraded its shortstop. Kiner Falefa will go, you know, and man shortstop by trading Gary Sanchez. And you know this is the Yankee fan. That's a spot that's been a real problem area for them. You had pitchers privately complaining about Sanchez's defense. But that goes by the board. And Donaldson, you know, he still is considered to be a good third baseman, maybe not as good as he used to be, but they bring him in.
And they do bring him in. And here is Brian Cashman about the particulars of the deal.
Yeah, I mean, we feel by doing this trade that we've upgraded defensively and offensively at third, defensively at shortstop, you know, place Glaber in a position that he's best at second base. So I think, you know, on the infield side, we've upgraded, you know, three different ways and improved the defense on the catching side as well. So, you know, I think the overall feel for us is that it settled a lot of interests on our end. It was with one transaction with one particular team, you know, solved a lot of areas of focus that we have targeted, and that's, you know, where, you know, where it led us. The beauty for us was that settled a lot of business in that area and still provides flexibility, and at the same time we retain prospects. You know, a lot of people ask, a lot of guys from our system, understandably so, and we didn't have to shoot any of those bullets to fix some areas of need.
You know, one thing I worry about, the Yankees are so protective of their prospects, they can't all come up. Three of the top prospects in your system are shortstops. Volpe, Peraza, and Sweeney. I mean, you just drafted Sweeney, too. You can't keep them all. So you have to make a hard decision if there's a deal out there that could help you in the immediate. You know, Brian's statement that he once made on this air, I don't want to win a championship, I want to win championships. Well, you got to win one before you can win two. So you keep holding on to these prospects, and what does it mean? Now, one quick Met note. Did you see this? Very scary how it can all go away in a moment.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso in Tampa got T-boned at a light. Somebody blew a red light. His car flipped over three times, he and his family. And everybody's okay.
That's
he kicked
amazing.
Out the windshield while the car was on its side to get out. His wife is okay. The family and the car was okay. But, you know, there's video of it. We're showing it now on. Yeah, it's just scary that he's okay. He doesn't even have a scratch. It just show you. You wake up in the morning. Just be thankful, man. Just be thankful.
And you can only be careful so much. I mean, if somebody runs a red light, you can't control that. Now, if a guy goes out and drives 100 miles per hour down Hempstead Turnpike and flips, well, that's on them. But if you're abiding by the rules, you wear the seatbelt, the light's green, you go through and get T-boned by somebody who's not responsible, yeah, at any moment, right?
He did say, he had a funny line. He said, I really want to thank Ford for making a really strong car.
There you go.
Yeah, what an advertisement. All right, so you've got the buffet. We still have to talk about what Kevin Durant did yesterday and what he said, and Tom Brady coming back. Yeah. You've got a lot of stuff to do. And also, March Madness is fourth on the show today. And then Drop Madness is lurking.
Drop
the committee
Madness
has done its job.
Now, what day did we unveil?
We're still talking about it.
Really? Because is it Wednesday, or do we go with the traditional Thursday? Because no offense to Rutgers or anybody that's in the play-in, but it really ramps up on Thursday, no?
That starts Thursday.
Yeah, but, you know, Don, when you say no offense, you really do mean offense.
Well, no, listen, but is it true that, that Rutgers is going to play in Dayton on Wednesday night, a 9:30 tip, and if they win, they're scheduled for 4 o'clock in California?
It is true, and it seemed like Chris Carlin got very upset about it.
Well, yeah, that's how I found it out.
Well, I understand. And
as I would say, well, then play better than just being in the play-in.
Oh, that's not.
I mean, if you're in the play-in, you're gonna face tougher odds.
Yeah, but does everybody have those tough odds?
I'm not quite sure. But you have to win seven games rather than six to win a national title.
No, but what I'm saying is it that crazy? Like in any sport, even when you finish like as the eighth seed or the play-in in the NBA, do they have to schedule at 4 when you're playing at 9:30?
But they schedule – you're playing at 9:30 Tuesday. The game you'd play would be on Thursday.
No, I thought Carlin said it was Wednesday.
No.
Because there's no issue
Rutgers
there.
The playing game is Wednesday, and then the next game is Thursday?
Then they play the next day.
Friday. It's Friday, Don. It's Friday. They have a day.
Well, then that's not – then what is he complaining about?
Because he's a whiner. He's a crybaby.
No, because I was just
going by
his tweet. I saw Rutgers was in, but I didn't look at the schedule.
He's a crybaby.
No, but if he got a day –
because you know what? He wants Rutgers on like a magic carpet ride to New Orleans. That's what he wants.
No, but wait
he's
a
not
minute.
Being
if
objective.
He got the day. All right, so they're going to tip off at 9:30, right?
Yeah.
You know how it is for Yankees. So you figure wheels up – what time, Michael? Probably by 1.
Okay.
So they'll get it. Where are they playing in California? So then they gain because what Ohio's still the Eastern Time Zone, right? Yeah. So they're going to gain the 3 hours, and they get back at the whole next day off, right? It's not ideal, but it's nothing to complain about. I thought it was like the next day.
Oh, because it's Friday?
He's a whiner. That's what he is. He wants Rutgers to be ushered in to New Orleans.
If it's the Friday, you got no kick coming.
He has no kick coming, but he just likes to whine. All right, let's take a brief timeout. I'm sure some fans want to whine about this deal with the Yankees. We'll allow you to. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you, right here on a Monday, starting off the week hot on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Both the Yankees and the Mets will have their broadcast debuts this Sunday. Yankees on Yes and the Mets will be on SNY. That's this Sunday, so we still have a ways to go. That's Game Time brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. All right, let's take some phone calls. This should be fun. Let's go to Steven in New Jersey. Steven.
Hi, Michael. First time caller, long time listener. I just want to say love your show. Love you, Don and Pete. I just want to thank you guys for everything.
Thanks.
Seriously, your show is so great to listen to. And, yeah, my question is, you've talked about this just now with Donaldson and the trade. Is the biggest thing that I don't get is why are we taking on all $50 million of Donaldson's contract? Because it seems like the Yankees have other areas where we have to address, and the only way we can address it now is by spending money. We still have to re-sign Judge, our franchise, our face of our franchise. You know, Olsen is apparently getting traded to the Braves now, so we can't even trade for him. Mm-hmm. So it's looking like Freddie Freeman is our go-to option. And
that's probably Rizzo.
But then, you know, comparing our team to last season, are we really that much better? I mean, I get IKF, great, you know, defensive player, can play third, shortstop, second base, even catcher. But Josh Donaldson hit .247. Struck out over 110 times last season. I just don't understand the direction we're going in.
But you're giving away. You're glossing over the fact he had 26 home runs too, and drove in 70 something runs.
And you also heard the reason from the source, Brian Cashman. This seemed to be all about upgrading defensively, and they are much better defensively now at those two very important positions.
I got to tell you a quick secret. So Connor Falefa has played for the Rangers his whole career.
Right.
And every time the Yankees would face the Rangers, I would quietly say a small little quick prayer. Please don't let the Yankees ever get this. I can't say his name. I can't say it. Peter, that's everything I have trouble with, the R and the A in the same name.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to be practicing that in my car. It's hard. Well, I might just have to go with IKF.
Went with IKF, but let's face it, Peter. You can't be throwing around IKF for, you know, a 220 hitter that's booting the ball at short. You have to be good to start getting me called IKF, right? CP3 doesn't happen if he's like the sixth guy off the bench and plays a minimal amount. CP3's got to be a future Hall of Famer.
The guy who punched Gino, how did he get IK?
Well, no, because that was his name. No, IK and Impali, that was his first name.
His first name was spelled out, like IKAY.
Right, right. I mean, I wish it was a shortening for Impali, but kind of Falefa, say that quick. Ground ball to short, kind of Falefa up. It's just, it's
there
hard.
There you go. That's it.
Well, but, you know, I'll mess it up. I can't even say neighborhood, so.
Neighborhood.
Neighborhood.
Yeah, but you say it the way the listeners say it.
Right.
That's a New York way of saying it.
Let's go to Anthony in Jersey City. Anthony? Anthony.
So, I'm feeling a little bit dejected after these moves, and I really have no problem with trading Gary Sanchez. I thought it was time to move on, and I'll miss Gio, but I thought that, you know, Donaldson is objectively an upgrade over him defensively. But, you know, there's a lot of warts with Donaldson in that the most optimistic view is that he's still going to miss about 20 to 30 games given his injury history. And, you know, when you look at what they did elsewhere, right now the Yankees 7 through 9 hitters are projected to be Aaron Hicks in center field, IKF at shortstop, and the platoon at catching. That does not inspire much confidence that, you know, they fixed what was a really big problem for them last year, which was their offense. And I understand that defense was as well. I understand that they were slow. And the solution now being, well, they're going to turn their attention to a guy like Anthony Rizzo instead of Freddie Freeman and not getting Matt Olson. I mean, that doesn't make me feel like this team is going to be that much better offensively than they were last year. It just seems like they just created a couple of extra problems for themselves without really addressing what was happening. And to me, what I really wanted the most out of this offseason was for it to be a little bit more transformative. I really thought, you know, they should have moved on from Aaron Boone. I thought that they should have traded Sanchez and, you know, gotten rid of some other players. And I guess there's still time to do that. But I really just wanted to feel like their offense and their defense was a little bit more of a sure thing coming into this season. And it just isn't. I think that, you know, they have gotten a little bit weaker offensively. And now you're also importing guys like IKF and, you know, this platoon at catching. And now you're also banking on, well, Joey Gallo has to perform better. DJ LeMahieu has to perform better.
You're answering your own question.
Has to perform better.
Here's what they're doing, Anthony. They're putting a lot of faith in Joey Gallo having a good year and Aaron Hicks having a good year. That's what they expect that DJ LeMahieu is healthy now. So, yeah, they have, from 1 to 9, you'd look and say, well, they've dropped down. But they value defense. I don't know if they evaluate it as much as offense, but they value it a lot. And WAR takes both of those into account. So we mentioned this earlier. Donaldson's WAR was just under 3.5 last year. Connor Falefa, his WAR was 3.5. Gio's was like 0.6. Gary's was like 0.5. So they've improved exponentially with WAR. I mean, so if you look at those two players, right, and they don't do anything else, right, they have gained 7 points in WAR. That's 7 wins.
But I think the fans are looking at it as, what has been our problem? Why have we not won a championship? Getting to the playoffs hasn't necessarily been an issue. They haven't won a division, but, you know, going to the playoffs, especially with the extra wild card, it seems to be a fait accompli. But what is the issue in the postseason? It's getting that hit. Has there really been errors that have cost them, or has it been just leaving runners on, not getting the big hit? So when you talk about improving defensively, was that an issue in the playoffs?
No, they haven't been able to hit.
Right. Or they look at it and say, hey, 7 more wins mean we're not playing for the wild card. How many divisions have they won over the last decade? What has it been, two? You know, so maybe they look at that value because, again, the analytics always talk about how the playoffs are a crapshoot. Most deals, Michael, are made for 162. So this deal was probably made for, hey, let's win the division. Let's get the bye.
Now, one thing I would tell people, though, to just be relax a little bit about, last year, Donaldson played 135 games. Now, he was hurt in the shortened season. He played 28 out of the 60 games. Mm-hmm. But the year before that, he played 155 games with Atlanta. 155.
Right. And then the year before that.
Didn't play a lot.
Between Cleveland and Toronto.
52 games.
He played 52 games. So it seems to be almost like every other year he played 113 games that the 2017 season. But you're right. But before that, 155, 158, 158, 158. But you're also talking about somebody who's now 36. So
it's a risk. It's a risk, and this guy seems to have calf problems, which really keep you out for a while. It's a risk, and you're taking on a lot of money.
Hey, but you're paying how much? $90 million for DJ LeMahieu.
Right.
Would it be the end of the world
if
he goes on the disabled list and LeMahieu's your third baseman?
Absolutely. Keep him fresh so they don't have to push him. I mean, if you really want to be creative, kind of Falefa is supposed to play every day. Gleyber Torres likes to play every day. So it's going to have to be very, very creative managing for Aaron Boone if DJ does not have a starting spot to get him 500 at-bats. Going to be awfully creative. You got the rest people that don't want to be rested.
How could he?
I don't know, unless
somebody
gets hurt.
If everybody stays healthy, how could he get 500 at-bats?
Right, because the bottom line, DJ doesn't play short. So you're going to have to get the 500 at-bats. I guess you could get a lot of the at-bats if you sign Rizzo, who's also getting older, and you could kind of have a quasi-platoon with the two of them. Quasi, where against some left-handers, DJ would play first. I don't know how you're going to sit down Gleyber and Donaldson. Do you just like factor in, well, he's going to get hurt, so that's going to give DJ like a month of play? I don't know. But hey, anybody who sits back and thinks that this was a no-brainer, no, I'm not going to sit here and put lipstick on a pig. I don't know if it's a no-brainer. There's a lot of things that have to happen. They're still not a finished product. If they think this is a finished product, they're not. And if they keep Luke Voit at first, Luke, I like, he led the league in home runs a couple of years ago, led majors, then they're too right-handed again, Don.
Well, that's the other thing, too, I was going to bring up. You know, they're getting a lot of right-handed hitting.
I mean, just think of who's your left-handed hitter then. Your left-handed hitter is Gallo and Hicks. And then Rortvit, if they platoon a catcher, he's a left-hander. But otherwise, it's all righties again, which was a problem. That's why they made the trades they made last year for Gallo and Rizzo. And you're kind of sliding right back into that. So that's why I'm going to reserve judgment until probably April 6th to see how this team really shakes out. I mean, they have to have some kind of plan. They're supposedly still in on Freeman, but I doubt it. And then if they lose Freeman to the Dodgers, all of a sudden Rizzo has all the leverage in the world. So could really drive up the price.
So the concern is they just don't want to pay that money for Freeman because it seems to make sense. You need a first baseman.
I think they love Freeman.
He's a lefty.
I think they would pay it.
So what's the issue?
Freeman's from California. Now, they battled that before with CC Sabathia, who was from Northern California. He's never going to sign New York. He did, and he loved it. I don't know. Freeman was a homegrown Brave, and now he's a guy who grew up in Southern Cal, would love to play for the Dodgers. We'll see. The Yankees are not out of it. But I wouldn't say they're the favorite at the clubhouse turn. So that would lead you to Anthony Rizzo, unless they have other plans, which I can't quite figure out. Nobody was reporting the Yankees were in on Josh Donaldson. No one. That's how Cashman works. Very stealth, and then he springs it on you. Right, let's take a brief timeout. More phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael Kay Show.
What this does, Donaldson has an edge, and that's a nice way to put it. The Yankees as a team have not had an edge, and this guy will rub people the wrong way. And I think they need that. The fact that they acquire a guy like Donaldson, they need that on that team. The Yankees very likable, good guys. But is there anybody that's going to get in your face in the clubhouse? I think Donaldson will. And if they bring that Rizzo also a really good clubhouse guy. And I think that that's going to be gigantic as well. They finally decided, you know what? Chemistry and what you do in that clubhouse matters.
You want to be concerned about Josh Donaldson, be concerned about the fact that every other year he seemed to have gotten hurt here later in his career. This to me is about Volpe and them not willing to give him up. That's why they lost out on Olsen.
The Michael Kay Show.
You've doubled down on either Volpe or Peraza being your shortstop in the next year or so.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, the news fast and furious. Usually the Monday after Selection Sunday is a day that's filled with college basketball. It's taken a backseat to a lot of stories, and the first thing that knocked it off was Tom Brady decided to unretire.
Oh, yeah.
40 days and 40 nights he was retired. Now, I can't sit here and take total credit for predicting this. I said he was going to play again. I don't know if he was going to play this year. I thought that even if he took a year off, he was not done playing, and he decided to come back. Now, I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I didn't understand why he retired. The guy didn't have a good year, had a great year.
Not good.
Great.
Great.
Okay, so I never understood why he was going away. I the only thing that we could all come up with was, you know, family obligations. But after a while, you're going to be resentful of your family if you give up something you love. And we're going to have Seth Wickersham on, who wrote the Book of the Patriots. And I kept referring back to that, especially when Brady retired. And that's why I was sure he was going to come back. If you read this book, and Seth will tell you this at 4:30, the man is obsessed with football. And I don't think it's a stretch to say he loves football more than anything. This is his life. It's why he gets up. It's why he breathes every single day. And he just gave it up. And he gave it up while he was at the top of the game. It just didn't click for me. Didn't click. And I felt that at some point he was going to say, I got to go back. That point took 40 days.
Yeah, that's weird.
I guess picking up his kids 40 days at school, he said, this is not the life that I want.
I am not feeling good, guys, about this marriage lasting very much longer.
You mean the Patriots and you mean the Buccaneers and Brady?
No, I'm going about his Instagram tweet where the family's walking away. They might just keep walking. Because, Michael, I've been around sports for 40 years. We've seen plenty of comebacks. The comeback story is always the same. Is they're fine with their decision until all of a sudden the season starts to ramp back up again.
Right.
When camps open, they start to see their guys, their buddies reporting to camp, games are being played. Then there's something to miss. Literally, the 40 days he was away – we're no different than if he decided to stay. There's nothing going on. Nothing changed. Zero. He wouldn't have been doing anything anyway. There was zero to miss, which tells me he didn't want to do this. There were outside forces that he caved to, and then after 40 days said, you know what, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I still believe that I can give. Because what's there to miss? There's nothing going on. If he had done this, Michael, a week in the camp, I'd say, all right, well, he misses camp. It became real for him. These 40 days should have been easy. No sweat. And you can't even say it had anything to do with the conference not having any quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers is still there. If he decided to stay, really, what, Russell Wilson's the reason he decided to come back? Like nothing really changed
at
all.
But here's the thing that changed, Don. So I wonder if this convinces you. I was talking about this with people on Saturday. I went out to dinner, and I said, you know, we were talking about when I had vocal surgery.
Quote, unquote. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, not being on the air for 6 weeks. And you realize, I guess it's like a premature sign of what death is going to be like. It goes on. When you're gone, it doesn't stop. Nobody says, oh, Michael's not broadcasting. We can't broadcast anymore. Nobody's saying about Tom Brady, the NFL is going to stop without Tom Brady. He sees the world goes on without him. And if you see his level of preparation, Don, he works out 12 hours a day in the offseason. All of a sudden, he didn't have to do that. Maybe he missed it.
But
he missed the anticipation of the season.
But we're not even close to the start of the season.
But he wasn't doing anything.
I'd understand it after the draft, right? I'd understand it when mini camp started.
like it becoming real. This is the easy part. Nothing's changed. Like, for a guy that loves the sport, and we know it, there's no denying how committed he is to football. Why did he even decide to do it? Unless there was an outside force, unless his wife gave him an ultimatum, said, listen, I am leaving you if you play. And then it became like, well, listen, I don't want to lose my family over this. And then maybe she found the coming to Jesus moment and realized, I can't do that to him. He really wants to play. I'm going to take that off the table. I really think that has to be what happened here.
I will agree with Don. It's odd. Timing-wise, it's odd. I mean, you almost feel like, did Tom retire simply because it got scooped and reported by Adam Schefter? He wanted to take back the narrative and say he was retiring on his own, but never wanted to retire in the first place.
Maybe.
Like, was it a spite retirement? It might have been a spite retirement, because otherwise I'm trying to understand why, what's the rush to announcing right now? I mean, honestly, I'm sure Tampa Bay has been aware of where he is. No? Like, I have to imagine he's having conversations with the Bucks about where he's leaning.
You would think, right, you would think.
So, like, did he have to decide right now, to Don's point, in March? I mean, guys, he could have said it in early August and started week one.
He had to decide for players to come back. Players are going to want to play with him. So, and if they told all these players, by the way, Brady's, it would get out anyway, so. I don't think he could hold it till, you know, he shows up. And also, there are people out there, somebody like Mike Florio, a Pro Football Talk guys, he doesn't think he's going to play with the Bucs this year.
How does that work?
He thinks he's going to maneuver that the 49ers will make a trade with him. I don't know why the Bucs would do it. The Bucs don't have a quarterback. So the Bucs are going to have to be part of this quarterback carousel and get a quarterback. Now they have Tom Brady. I don't think he's just going to play this year. Anybody thinks he's just going to play this year, barring injury, he's going to play a couple more years, and then he's going to get $50 million a year, just like Rodgers.
I agree. He's going to play a couple more years. You almost can't come back right now after retiring. You can't come back for one. You got to come back for a couple now. Or it would look even crazier if he comes back for one halfway through the season, announces he's leaving, and goes on another retirement tour.
Now let me throw this at both of you, and I don't know if I feel right about feeling this way.
Go ahead.
I feel great about being right, and I feel great about getting a chance to see him play, and he has every right to come back. I think this is a bad look for him. It's a look that makes him look weak and indecisive. Am I wrong to feel that way?
No, I think that's the general feeling about this. But you go out there and compete for an MVP again, it's not anything that's going to really damage his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, who cares?
I'm not worried about his legacy, it's just a bad look.
No, but it just looks – but again, the whole – because I think most people are like you. I'm kind of the same way. At the end of the day, you get a chance to see him play again, you know, and for him to be able to play this deep into his 40s is awesome. Although I'll tell you, there's a very good possibility that a very good quarterback is going to be in his division, because I think the Saints are going to end up with Watson. So he might have some really tough competition in the NFC South, but
if that's where he lands,
yeah. If indeed that's the case, or is this all a way? Yeah, you know, we don't know if Deshaun Watson's going to land with the Saints. And if Florio's right, maybe this is all just a ploy where Tampa ends up sending him to San Francisco anyway. But it just I don't care about the optic. It's just strange that these are the easy 40 days. These are the 40 days where you don't miss it at all. What was there to miss? What, just all the football news? But, like, on the day he decided to retire, what changed in those 40 days?
He just realized this was not the right decision for him. He loves the game too much.
Well, because
how about
the guy who bought, right
before he announced, right, the guy who brought Brady's last touchdown pass, $517,000. It's now a worthless football.
No, it's
not worthless. It's just not worth that.
Yeah. I think it's worth a football. Whatever football's worth. What does that mean?
No.
A Tom Brady
throwing
a touchdown is still a football worth a few bucks.
NFL football is way more than an actual football cost, and that it was thrown by Tom Brady. Yeah, it's not to that level, but it's still worth a lot more than whatever you go to Dick's Sporting Goods and buy an NFL football.
But it's not worth anywhere close to six figures. Not even five figures, I don't think.
An interesting talking point, because the person who bought that probably, you know, was a millionaire, probably a billionaire that just wanted to have it. Still kind of good talking point. This is from retirement one.
I mean, yeah, I have to imagine the guy who or girl who bought this football isn't sitting on $800,000 and spent $500 on the ball, right?
Yeah, the phone bill's still paid, I'm sure.
Now, I have a question that our radio listeners will not appreciate, but sure. Our TV viewers will. Peter, why are you changing shirts?
Yeah, what's up?
I was wearing a sweatshirt earlier. It was too hot.
Mm. Right.
I wanted to throw on a collar shirt. It's a big show today.
Right.
I threw on the quick collar shirt. I looked at myself on the screen. It was wrinkled and terrible. So I changed again into a better collar shirt.
Interesting.
You have to admit, though, it's a beautiful collar shirt now.
It is. It is. What's the logo?
The wardrobe changing is
what's
awesome.
What's the logo?
This is the All Saints logo.
Interesting.
Of Let's York? Listen. To...
it's just a company.
No, that's a nice shirt. That movie was eh.
That's the many saints of Newark.
I know. Right. Well, I was listen. It was. I'm not saying it was a great joke.
Okay.
But sometimes,
but
you
it
play
happened.
For par.
Right. Right. Sure. You just lay up.
Steve Young on SVP last night.
Cheating on us.
He said that he empathizes with Brady. Here's Young.
All great quarterbacks toward the end have to redouble their effort every year, both emotionally and physically, to stay on top. And it takes everything out of you. And so the typical cycle, trust me, is towards the end of the year is like, I'm done. And then by April, you're like, no, I'm good. Usually you don't announce it, though. You don't actually go public with it. But it's very typical. And the truth is, Tom planned, I think, for a long time, won the Super Bowl. Let's play a year and retire. And so that was the plan. He did it. And then all of a sudden, you get out there, and it's like falling off a cliff, especially for Tom. What's you were the greatest of all time. Now you're not great at anything, let alone good at anything. And that's a shock to the system. And then you say to yourself, well, wait a second. Last year I led the league. And last year we were pretty good. And it just it eats away at you a little bit. And you can clearly see that 2 months, Tom's like, hey, not now, not yet.
Now, I was texting with Steve last night. And this is what he said. I thought what he said on text was so much more powerful than just what he just said right now. He said, it is physically painful when the reality sets in. Without some tremendous force, otherwise you'll always choose to end the pain and come back. That was a good call by you saying he would be back. So he's saying that it's physically painful to walk away. Yeah,
but he knows that. He's been around the league forever. He had to know.
But he never walked away.
How painful it would be to retire. He had to know, because let's face it, the reason he's played as long as he has, he doesn't want to do anything else. He doesn't want to retire. And then you decide to retire coming off a year where you almost win the MVP. Your team is still very good. Michael, I think the more believable thing is that he probably, and I'm not saying this in a negative, because I'm sure Giselle wants to move on with her life. I'm sure she doesn't want to spend, 6 months out of the year traveling around the country. She wants her husband, and the kids want their dad 24/7, because he doesn't have to work again. He'll always be home. So I don't think it came from a place of jealousy or evil. That she probably just said, we need you back. And I think he caved. And over the last 40 days, maybe his wife said, geez, you're miserable. I could see you walking around that. I could see you really want to play football. Go play football. That to me seems more believable than this Band-Aid ripped off and the pains too. No, he knew exactly what retirement would be, and he wanted no part of it. This seems like a decision that was made by somebody else. And that person changed their mind.
It's true, Peter.
No, it's a good point, because I didn't understand why at the end of this year he did it anyway. I was thinking the whole time, I'm going, you're playing this well. He's only 44. I mean, he's not 60. If you're still going, listen, it's not like his risk to get injured is so much worse now than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. He's never been mobile. He's still not mobile. He knows how to avoid being sacked. Why quit? To Don's point, there must have just been this pressure. And maybe it wasn't all just at home. Maybe he felt like he was getting it from the world in general. Like, when are you done? When are you done? When are you done?
That's what his dad said. He said he felt outside pressure to do it. Here's Adam Schefter on why Brady made the move to come back.
I think he took some time away, and I think that with free agency slated to kick off this week and with 24 Buccaneers players scheduled to be unrestricted free agents and able to enter into agreements starting at noon Eastern on Monday, if Tom Brady was going to return to Tampa and try to keep as many of these players and keep the team intact, the time to make that announcement, if he was sure and his family was good with it, was tonight, or at least before noon tomorrow, when some of these players could leave Tampa. And so he felt the pull to to return. And I think it didn't just come tonight. I think he'd been thinking this in previous days. My understanding is he's renewed his lease in Tampa in recent days. The Buccaneers had said they'd leave the light on, and they're glad they did, because Tom Brady has busted the brackets and come through that door, leaving the light on and returning to Tampa Bay.
So think about it, guys. 40 days away. And the way Adam said it, and the general feeling is, it wasn't like on day 40 he changed his mind. He changed his mind probably the second he did it. And was miserable, and whoever forced him, whether it was the outside forces, his family, probably said, I can't have you be miserable. Go back and play. And I'm with you guys. He's going to come back and play, and barring injury, it'll be for more than just 1 year.
Here is Ira from Staten Island. Ira, what do you think? Surprised?
Well, it was interesting with Brady. Anita told me on Saturday she had a feeling this was going to happen, and she hit it on the head. You know what? Good for him. You know, he's doing what he likes, whether he felt pressure or not. The guy still plays in an elite level. It's something that probably none of us will ever see again, a guy playing into his 45-year-old quarterback at that level. And I'm happy for him. But it had a little trickle effect with the Jets with free agent signings. But I tell you, I got to hand it to them. I thought they were going to lose Berrios. I guess his market was lower than I thought it was. And, you know, they got him for the right price. And the guard they got, Tomlinson from the 49ers, you know, that offensive line now, you know, it looks like Douglas finally got this thing complete. You know, if McGovern can come back, if they go with him, if they don't draft a center, and if Becton ever lives up to what he possibly could have been, there's no more excuses. You know, this offense has to click, and we still got a couple of days to go. So, you know, good for Brady, and so far the Jets, you know, I think they're doing the right thing so far early.
All right, so if you don't know what I was talking about, they signed Braxton Berrios, who had such a breakout season, and he and his agent were marketing him as a number one type slot receiver. The league didn't see him that way. The Jets were looking at him as, you know, a second or third receiver and special teams. I think he got 2 years, $12 million, which is nice, but certainly affordable, and he seemed like he was a good target for Wilson, and they did bring him back, and he was great on special teams.
Very good.
He led the NFL with 30.4 yards on kickoff returns, average. That was the best. That was the best. Punt average, 13.4 yards per punt. So they get back Braxton Berrios. Let's go to Ken in North Carolina. Ken.
Yeah, hey, I wanted to call and talk about Tom Brady coming out of retirement. I think the second that he did retire, he definitely regretted it. But he was just looking for signs throughout. And he was over in England this year, this weekend, watching Cristiano Ronaldo, who's 37 years old, still at the top of his game. He scored a hat trick to help his team win this weekend. And they were on the field afterwards talking, and there's video of them talking. And Cristiano Ronaldo asked him, like, are you done? And he, like, snickers about it. So I think the whole time he knew he was done, he was just waiting for the right moment and to be inspired. And I think Cristiano Ronaldo helped him out with that this weekend.
Well, it could be. I mean, I don't know if that was it. Why would a soccer player who's 7 years younger than you actually inspire you to play?
So. But, hey, I will say this, though. You never know what conversation with – there are not many people who are Tom Brady peers. Do you know what I'm saying?
And I never got a chance to talk to him.
Right, and he doesn't have the opportunity to talk to you. Ronaldo is one of the very few people on planet Earth who's on his level. So maybe did have a conversation that impacted him.
But here's the thing. You don't make a decision out of nowhere to retire in the first place.
No, Don, it's the opposite. It's been hard for him the entire time. He ends up sitting around kicking it with Cristiano Ronaldo before a game and tells him his hesitancy, and he's like, dude, then just go back and play. And hearing that from someone who's of your ilk, that could affect you.
But what about all the advice he was probably getting over the last couple of years from people saying, don't retire, keep playing, you're still healthy? Like, I would think if you're making a decision to retire, wouldn't you be asking people? Wouldn't you be going around trying to, like, really put a lot of thought into it? Before the decision to where all of a sudden you could be changed by just sitting there on the pitch with Ronaldo and going, you're absolutely right. I never thought of that.
Like, I think you had it right, Don. He did it for his family. Am I not being with my family enough? And then he realized, you know, I love football and I want to play football. I love my family. I can do both. It was a family. It wasn't I can't play. That wasn't the decision, or I'm done at 44. It was totally for his family.
Because he always said he wanted to play till he was 45. What happened over the last couple of years to make you think he couldn't do that? Now maybe just to be able to be fair to his family, maybe Giselle never said anything.
But maybe he just felt guilty and said, you know what, I really should be there for my family. And then after he retired, maybe his wife said, what are you doing? Yeah, come on. We're good. You know, we'll see. It's only going to be a few more years anyway. You're going to be, you're always still here for it. I really think it was just outside forces. I don't think he had any intention of retiring. So any kind of belief that anybody convinced him after the fact.
And let's
doesn't
be honest,
seem believable because I think he always felt in his heart he could still play.
And let's be honest, there's a certain level of built-in sexism that goes in these conversations where we always assume it's like the woman is just nagging him to come home. We have no idea. We really, Don, you're right. She could have been like, dude, if you didn't want to do it, go back and play. I'm good. It's not like she needs. It's not like she needs help. I'm sure they have plenty of help. They're good.
No, and again, I'm not trying to say the built-in sexism. It's just that, you know, you want to have the family as a whole. And it's hard in football. And when he dedicates himself to getting ready for the season and mini camp and preseason, it's hard. You know, as the kids are starting to grow up, you want your family to be whole. I'm not even mad at her if she said that to him, Peter.
No, me neither. I'm just saying we don't know that that's actually it. And I feel like that's what most – I'm not talking about you, but I think most people's version of this was he must have been getting pressured from Giselle. But let's, like, remember that this relationship is not normal. I mean, she's like a billion-dollar model herself.
Right.
Their whole situation's incredibly unique. But ultimately, can I tell you, while I find it to be a little bit annoying – that, like, he just kind of continues to thrust himself into the spotlight. I find myself generally happy about it, to get to watch him more.
Me too.
Yeah.
I wasn't done watching him. I think it's great. Let's take a brief time out. Seth Wickersham is going to join us. His book was my guidance on whether or not this guy was coming back. And we'll talk about it with Seth in just a moment, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is the Michael K. Show.
Tom Brady decided to unretire. 40 days and 40 nights he was retired. Now, I can't sit here and take total credit for predicting this. I said he was going to play again. I don't know if he was going to play this year. Now, I don't blame him. I didn't understand why he retired. The guy didn't have a good year, had a great year.
Not good.
Great. Okay, so the only thing that we could all come up with was, you know, family obligations. But after a while, you're going to be resentful of your family if you give up something you love. The man is obsessed with football. And I don't think it's a stretch to say he loves football more than anything. This is his life. And he just gave it up. And he gave it up while he was at the top of the game. It just didn't click for me. And I felt that at some point he was going to say, I got to go back. That point took 40 days.
Yeah, that's weird.
The Michael K. Show.
These 40 days should have been easy.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. The Michael K. Show from 3 to 7 every single day, Monday through Friday, here on 98.7 ESPN. Simulcast across the country on the Yes Network as well. You know, we're talking about the Yankees. Let's not forget the Mets made a significant trade with the A's, getting Chris Bassitt for two of their young pitchers in the system. And Chris Bassitt can deal. You know, he's the guy, if you don't know that much about him, got hit in the face and really was injured terribly, broke bones in his face, but came back to make two starts, which is important, so he got the fear out of the way. You look at his numbers, he's outstanding. And the Mets gave up a lot for a guy who has 1 year left on his deal. He's a free agent at the end of the season, but it's very clear that the Mets are going for it right now. Last year with the A's in 27 starts, 12-4 with a 3.15 ERA, 159 strikeouts in 157 and a third innings and just 127 hits, a whip of 1.06. He made the All-Star team last year as well. This guy can pitch. This guy is tough. This guy's a gamer, and he slides right in after Scherzer. It's DeGrom, Scherzer, Bassett, and then you can figure it whichever way you want after that, with Taijuan Walker and Carrasco, and it, you know, there's a couple of other guys you could slide in. It's very right-handed, but the bottom line is they made a move to improve their pitching. They also signed Adam Ottavino to a one-year deal, $4 million, so they're improving their bullpen as well. And slowly but steady, the Mets are doing what they need. They are going to fly over that $290 million Steve Cohen tax. And Steve Cohen spoke yesterday in Port St. Lucie. He said, yeah, we probably will. He said, it's not anything that's going to slow us down. So Buck Showalter is in the perfect situation. He's a guy who's maniacal about winning, and now he has an owner who has a maniacal desire to win and has an open checkbook. That's a good combination, Don.
And I know there was a concern about DeGrom's contract and now Bassett's contract. Are you really worried now that he's here in Cohen as opposed to the Wilpons, where you had this mortal fear of having free agents because you've assumed that they would walk at the end of the year? But now you have an owner. Listen, if Bassett ends up pitching great, and DeGrom stays healthy and he's great, do you have any worries that Cohen is not going to pay these guys and let them walk? Of course not.
And so, I thought he was really smart. He said, you know, we're not going to extend DeGrom right now. If he opts out at the end of the year, we'll deal with it. There's no fear anymore. If he has a great year and opts out, who's going to outbid the Mets?
Right.
And if he doesn't have a great year, he's not going to opt out. He'll stay in the contract that he has. It would be foolish to negotiate it right now.
And if you remember when they were in a similar situation last time when they gave him the extension, our concern, Michael, was, well, the Mets don't want him to go to free agency because they'll lose him.
Right.
But now, since you don't have to worry about that, this is exactly the way to play it. Because maybe it's injury plagued. You get him a little cheaper. If he ends up having a great year, you don't worry. You'll go out there and win the Cy Young. Great. A Cohen would gladly give him whatever he wants if he's able to go out there and do that. So the question is now, what do they spend it on? Because if Freeman doesn't want to come to the East Coast, Michael, I guess he's off the table, and there's been not one rumor of the Mets being in on Freeman, at least seriously. I think they'd love to have him, but it doesn't look like if he's not going to go play for the Yankees, you know, I would think the Mets are off the table too.
And it looks like Chris Bryant is getting closer to a deal with the Rockies. That was somebody that was always rumored with the Mets as well.
Holy crap.
Going back to trading for him last year and all that, when the Giants eventually got him. So where do they spend the money? Is it all on the bullpen?
I think that's probably it. That's probably it. And they can make trades, too. They could bring in somebody with a trade, money on a trade. You know, you've got J.D. Davis's trade bait. You've got Dominic Smith's trade bait. You've got guys that you can trade. So that could be where they bring in more money as well.
I mean, is there any more pitchers out there from a free agent standpoint?
Well, there's definitely pitchers. Like the A's have Sean Manaea. I mean, there are pitchers out there that could be traded for. And then, you know, the Reds just traded one of their best players, Jesse Winkler, their outfielder, to the Seattle Mariners. So there are a lot of teams that are going to be looking to dump salary. They are. Because if they're not going to compete, they're just going to dump salary. And that's what the Players Association was trying to negotiate out of baseball, that teams can't do that. But the A's look like they're having a fire sale right now. And Bassett was a good acquisition for the Mets.
So, yeah, I was going to say, isn't that just the beginning for the A's? So there could be more opportunities there.
Yeah, you'd say Chapman. That's a guy that the Mets would be interested in as well. He could play third base. So you never know what's going to happen. The A's continue to have an open flea market sort of situation. So we shall see. The Yankees made their first big move yesterday. They made the trade that it's being met with I don't say it's being met with great applause by Yankee fans. They traded Gary Sanchez and Gio Urshela to the Twins for Josh Donaldson, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and Ben Rortvedt, who is a catcher, a left-handed swinging catcher, also good defensively. Kiner-Falefa can really pick it at shortstop. He's not a power hitter, but he can hit for average about 270. Josh Donaldson, last year in not a great year, 26 home runs and 70-something RBIs. And although he's not the fielder that he once was, he's still a pretty good fielder. And the Yankees give up on Sanchez, who you know, the outside noise was getting to him. The Yankees realized it. They still believe that he could put up numbers that most catchers can't, power-wise, and he can, but he's just not Johnny Bench behind the plate. He's just not a great defensive catcher, and every single mistake that he made amplified, magnified by the New York fans and the New York media, and it came back into the clubhouse. So when they saw an opportunity to upgrade at the catching, and they did, they upgraded defensively. They did not upgrade offensively because the combination of Rortfit and Higashioka, boy, if that combination hits over 200, the Yankees would be thrilled. Maybe they could hit 15 to 20 home runs, but they're going to catch at a top level. And the Yankees wanted that. And I said kind of Falefa also can pick it at shortstop, and Donaldson holds his own at third. So that's the deal. But the curious part, Yankees took on $50 million in contract in Josh Donaldson, an average of $25 million a year, which is surprising to me, especially for a 36-year-old. It's not a slam dunk. If the guy's healthy and comes close to what he was with the A's, well, then it's a home run. But if he's not healthy, right, it's far from a home run.
But it's not like they don't have an alternative if he ends up getting hurt. LeMahieu can play over there. If the feeling is that Volpe can come up at some point this year, and there is talk, Michael, that he can be at least a September call-up, if not somebody that can maybe be called up during the course of the year, well, then that becomes an option too, because IKF can play third. So it's not like they'd be bereft of third base options, but it wouldn't be Donaldson. It wouldn't be a guy that in a great year can go out there and hit you 30 home runs and drive in 90 RBIs. He's also somebody that might play 50 games this year because he's hurt, because it seems like every other year that calf becomes a major problem for him. Yankee fans have a problem with this because it's not a slam dunk that they're any better than they were last year, because it wasn't defense that stopped them from going deep into the playoffs. It was an offensive issue. But I think Brian Cashman looks at it and says, the postseason's a crapshoot. We know we're going to the playoffs, but if we can improve by 7 games, and the WAR tells you that the players they got are 7 games better than the players they gave up overall, that could be the difference from being a wild card team to having to buy. And that's the way they're looking at it.
Yeah, and there's a great value to winning your division, being the team with one of the two best records. You sit out the wild card round, which is big. Now, personally, really disappointed they didn't get to make the trade for Matt Olson. If you just joined us, Matt Olson is going to his hometown team, the Atlanta Braves.
What?
And by the Braves pulling the trigger on this deal, what they've done is that they said goodbye to a fan favorite, Freddie Freeman, coming off a World Series championship with a team, made, I believe, $110 million in profit. Now, they gave up their first and second best prospects, and they gave up their sixth and 14th best prospects. So there's differing accounts of top prospects in the Yankee system, but that essentially for the Yankees would be, Yankees would have had to give up Anthony Volpe, Jason Dominguez, Austin Wells, and Brandon Beck. And they didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do it. Brian has always preferred to acquire somebody as a free agent because, or in a trade, because you don't have to give up your best minor league players. And now you can't play them all, but the Yankees do truly believe in Volpe. That's why they didn't go for Seager. They didn't go for Story. They did not make a move. It seems like they haven't made a move on Carlos Correa. They believe in Volpe and Peraza, that one of them is going to be a big-time shortstop for them. So by making this trade, you fill the hole at third because Gio was supposed to be the shortstop, and you have a shortstop who could be a one-year stopgap until Volpe's ready, even 1.5 years, because he signed for 2 more years before he becomes a free agent. He's young. He plays a lot of games. He's very good at shortstop. Seems like a good clubhouse guy. And that's your shortstop right now. So they ignored the big free agent market, and now they move on, and it's a little bit of a gamble. But I would have loved to have seen Olson. I think Olson would have played perfectly at Yankee Stadium, but I understand the sentiment. So now you go, well, what next? Well, supposedly, reportedly, they're still in on Freeman. I don't like the chances. I would say he's probably going to the Dodgers. He was born in Southern Cal. It looks like it's a reunion with Anthony Rizzo. Although, once Freeman signs everybody, and now Olson is gone, you know what it is? It's a huge leverage play for Rizzo. I mean, a huge now I want more. Where else are you going to go? Now, the other place the Yankees could go, they could move Donaldson to first, and they could get another third baseman, maybe a Matt Chapman from the A's, or they could play DJ LeMahieu at first. Now, DJ LeMahieu is not a great defender at first. Anthony Rizzo is a good defender. Luke Voit is below average. So those are the decisions they have to make. So before Yankee fans go crazy, it's not a finished product yet. At least I hope it's not. And what Aaron Boone said on Sunday, I kind of giggled at when he said, you know, if we don't make any moves, you know, we're good enough to win. No, you weren't. You weren't good enough to win. And I think you still need moves now to be good enough to win. Another pitcher wouldn't hurt. Another center fielder wouldn't hurt. And you certainly need to solve the first base problem.
Yeah, because are you ready to go to war with Luke Voit for 162? Are you going to be able to gamble that Hicks isn't going to be an injury situation in the outfield? You know, so there's a lot more left to do. But as far as the big moves concerned, you know, they could re-sign Rizzo, and that just might be it. A couple of maintenance moves here and there, that'll be your team. Now, is that a team that can threaten to win the division, win it all? Well, it's a playoff team, that's for sure.
I think they need another starter. You know, they've got a lot of starters, but if you can get a high-end starter, like if you could somehow get Sean Manaea from the A's, that's a big move. Now, Josh Donaldson is going to wear Al Leiter's old number 28.
Okay.
And Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is going to wear Ron Bloomberg's old number 12.
Well, Bronny's okay with that.
Well, he's kind
of Falefa has been flowing out of your mouth with ease today.
Yeah, you're
have
good.
To worry about it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that gives me a problem. When I say the first name with it, there's too many in there, and I'll trip up. So the first time I say it, giving the lineup, I'll say his full name. After that, he'll never be called Isaiah again.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta, because when there's a ground ball, you don't want to give the full name anyway.
That's
now,
right.
The question is, could you get away with just saying Falefa? I guess not, right?
No, it's not his name. How dare you?
You can't. I mean, because again, the hyphen, his whole last name is Kiner Falefa. And then,
isn't that a tough
thing? There's a lot of them in the NHL. This is a question out of ignorance. I really don't know.
Of course.
Do you see a lot of the hyphens in last names now because there are people that want to have both the mother and the father's name?
That's right.
I don't know. Isaiah is from Hawaii. I'll have to investigate when I see him. I'm going down to Tampa on Friday night, and I'll ask him.
Because the NHL's got a bunch of them. Ryan Nugent Hopkins. Devontae Smith-Pelly.
He's my favorite.
Well, listen, don't mock. He was a devil.
I'm not mocking.
You were. You were. You had no idea he existed. If I told you he was an intern, you would have believed me.
No, he's heard of Smith-Pelly before.
No.
Didn't he host 60? He's one of the hosts of 60 Minutes, right?
So we're going to continue to mock. Peter, he went from I'm not mocking to just then to continue to
open,
mock.
That's what makes
I'm
special.
Not saying he was a great player. He was on that Capital team that won a cup. He was a devil. I mean, listen, he wasn't a nobody. He was a player of color in the National Hockey League.
I was about to say, Smith-Pelly's a black dude, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a pretty memorable dude, Michael. It's kind of actually bad.
Well, I'm not saying Michael needs to know who he is.
He should.
But I'm saying to mock the idea that I know, or that anybody would, is really doing a disservice
now,
to the Smith-Pelly family.
Speaking of mockery within our own station, did you guys get a load of what the DCR crew?
Well, this is why they got to do more work on the show. I didn't hear it, but I heard of it.
DNR, that is.
Yeah,
do
you
not resuscitate.
In there? Canty's been gone for how long?
Yeah, sorry. So there's a bracket. They're doing a station bracket.
Gutsy, I love it.
A battle. Like Drop Madness. I mean, of course, it's still ripping off Drop Madness, Dom, but we know everyone's ripping us off. But it takes jocks from the station, hosts from the station, and runs them directly up against each other in bracket form.
The first round's tough for Don. He loves himself some Gordon Damer. He's going right up against Gordon.
I'm rooting for him.
I'm rooting for Ty Butler and Joe Wiz. I'm going to play one of them.
So you're playing the winner of Ty Butler and Joe Wiz?
Yes, that's a play-in game, the only play-in.
And you're the one seed overall, of course.
Now, yeah.
Are you comfortable? I guess the question
I'm
is,
Sully.
Are we comfortable with the seeding? Now, Michael, clearly number one. Nobody's going to argue with that. He's the transmitter. And I have no issue with Greeny at two, although
working
occasionally should help.
Right. Don, you should be two.
I that's for other people to say.
And how did their own show rated Peter over Dave?
I see. That's credible. They're doing – the interesting thing is – not that I'm five.
That's right, man.
But that, to me, the more interesting piece is not me. It's that Rick is ahead of Dave. I mean, there are people who believe Dave is pound for pound the best on the station.
Yeah, I've said that.
Somebody with us believes that.
I called the show. We had a nice segment on Saturday. Wish him happy birthday.
See, I didn't do that because I don't need to show off my love for somebody. I texted him privately. You had to call the show to get on air.
No, but I think it helps the show. Like, it's the nice thing to do. I wasn't doing anything. I dialed up. We did a nice segment. Called him an awful father. He tried to defend himself.
And that was it.
Because, again, he's trying to make it seem, Peter, that he didn't go to the basketball game, you know, protesting that everybody's got to play. Come on, there's a lot of things he missed with his kids for lesser issues. Giant preseason games, for God's sakes. But whatever, we've talked about that enough. But this is really a challenge, right? Because it's friend against friend.
Well, I want to lose the first round game. I want to be out. A lot of people are hearing rumors that Freddie Freeman could be going to Toronto.
Holy crap.
Well, that's like, not exactly the West Coast, Michael.
No, it's not. It's another country, by the way. And also, Vlad Guerrero is your first baseman, so all of a sudden you got to move everything around. I guess I put Vlad back at third or DHing. But
I would have to think that in order for him to go to the Blue Jays is that the Blue Jays just blew the Dodgers out of the water with the offer.
Right, that's it.
So the question becomes, why didn't the Yankees do that if that indeed does happen?
Because I don't think that you make decisions in a vacuum, and you've got to sign Aaron Judge at the end of this year. And if you want to keep that to a reasonable contract length, you can't give a 30-year-old a 6-year deal.
I don't know if you got to sign Judge.
I think you do.
Not if he plays 28 games this year, you know.
Well, but I'm a glass half full guy. I think it'll be
fine.
Mister,
well, I'm dying every time you feel a twinge.
Personally, I'm a glass a quarter empty, but for the world, I'm a glass half full. Hinky Haynes said, Dave Rothenberg pointed out that everyone at the station reached out to him to say happy birthday, except for Peter.
Well, Peter was very busy.
Oh yeah, hold on. When was Dave Rothenberg's birthday?
Saturday.
Oh yeah, I was booked solid Saturday.
Knee deep. Waist deep.
I was in Los Angeles. I had a lot
waist deep
on.
In the Big Muddy.
Now before we go to break, Bob Nightingale reporting the Twins plan on using Gary Sanchez as a DH and backup catcher for the time being.
So I guess they don't really buy into his framing.
Are you okay, Peter? Because we haven't even asked you this. Brandon Scherff just up and left Washington to go sign with the Jaguars.
What?
How are you feeling about that?
The Jaguars.
Yeah.
Let that sink in.
Can you imagine?
I am imagining.
What does it say? I mean, obviously what it says is he got offered a lot of money, but still.
That's all it says, really.
I mean, I guess, because we essentially lost our best player. You know, I mean, he's the only perennial Pro Bowler on that team. And he's gone. That's nice. At one point, we had Trent Williams and Brandon Scherff.
Now you have neither.
That's right. And Trent, how's it working out with him? Still playing pretty well, right? I think last time I checked, he's like still the second best left tackle in football, maybe third.
You can renounce the Commies if you want.
I want to.
The perfect time to do it. Let's take a brief timeout as Peter thinks about renouncing. We'll take your phone calls on the Yankee Admit Moves, 1-800-919-3776. It is Kay. It is LaGreca. It's Rosenberg, and it's you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So this just came out. The Nets have been fined $50,000 for violating the New York City law and league health and safety protocols during the team's game Sunday with the Knicks. The violation occurred when the Nets permitted Kyrie Irving, who was in attendance at the game, to enter the team's locker room. Okay, so he's being fined anyway. Why don't you just play him and pay the fine?
Now that's a good point.
You can't do that.
But you're getting fined for letting him in the locker room. You might as well let him play.
Well, no, I think it was stupid, Don, that this happened. But you're not going to take. They're not going to pay those fines for every game that he. They're not going to do it. The NBA won't let them do it. Never mind. Even if the Nets wanted to, the NBA would not let them do it.
because of the optic that that would look, that they're using their billions to get over when there are hardworking people in New York who can't work that are unvaccinated that don't have that ability to do it. The NBA would not want the optic. This is just stupid. I mean, honestly, this is just them not thinking. Do you really need him in the locker room that you got to pay a $50,000 fine? So obviously it was just ignorance, not realizing that they were committing a violation of the rules.
But again, think about how dumb this is. The guy's in their locker room after practices in Brooklyn. He's in their locker room in road games. But step in the locker room after a Nets game in Brooklyn, and you're going to find 50. Okay. None of it makes sense.
No, we know it doesn't make sense, Michael. But my point is that what? Why did he have to be in the locker room?
Because
when
he's a nozzle.
You're going to get banged for 50 grand.
He's a nozzle.
Yeah, but the Nets don't have to allow him in there.
Oh, you're going to stop Kyrie Irving from?
My God,
they let him do everything.
God,
he runs
for
the team.
Say, no, we're not going to get. You're not going to get fined $50,000. You don't have to be there. Wait outside. God, I'm tired
because,
of talking
but
like
Donnie,
it.
Oh, don't, Donnie, they
don't,
really
don't,
stood
don't
up
say
to
anything
these
to Kyrie. You know, don't look. Hey, don't listen. When you don't look at it, it was the same rules that Chernoff gave me for when I interned at K-Rock with Howard Stern. Like, don't speak to him unless spoken to. Don't make eye contact. God, it is a little irritating that he's a human being, but God, we can't tell him anything. You can't tell him not to do something. Give me a break. Stop already. God, he's annoying. The whole thing is annoying.
Yeah, why did no one say, hey, dude, you can't come in the locker room?
Because
you can't, Peter, because then you get really upset and maybe not want to play when they do lift the mandates.
It's the rules, though. Like, it's...
It's a stupid rule. There's plenty of stupid rules. But listen, I know they're worth billions of dollars, but it's not that important for Kyrie to be in the locker room after a game that I got to pay 50 grand for the privilege.
And Barbara Barker of News 8, he came into the locker room at halftime. There's no rules for these guys. None. They run the team. That's why Kenny Atkinson's not there.
But I understand that there's different rules. It's the 21st century. But when a player can run the organization like that, then that you're either just scared of them or you're doing that by design. Like, come on. You should be able to say to one of your players, no matter how important they are, you can't go in the locker room. I'm sorry. There's a mandate. We're going to get a $50,000 fine. You can't do it.
Right.
Like,
if we were going to get the fine,
scared, you can't say that?
If we were going to get the fine, we would have done it to have you play, not walk into the locker room.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Emmanuel in Brooklyn. Hello, Emmanuel.
Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon, everyone.
How you doing?
Hello. What's up?
All is well. I feel like with the Yankees, they could have sweetened up that deal with the Minnesota Twins with them having ties to Byron Buxton the last couple of years. I know he was extended 7 years, $100 million. If I was the Yankees, I would have threw in a prospect considering that they have a bunch of pitchers. You got Clark Schmidt, Michael King, Luis Gill, Devi Garcia. I wouldn't touch Luis Gill, but why not sweeten up that deal and send Aaron Hicks back to Minnesota and just see if they would bite for Byron Buxton in that package deal that they got.
If the Twins accepted a trade of Aaron Hicks for Byron Buxton, they should have their franchise revoked. The GM would be fired immediately. They're going to take a guy who can't get on the field, who's 32 years old, and accept him in a trade for Byron Buxton, who they just got a great deal that's going to be worth so much money to them if he actually doesn't get injured. 7 years, $100 million, and you're going to take on a contract of $10 million a year on Aaron Hicks.
Right.
Emmanuel, I'm sorry, why would they bite on that?
Right. On a player they already had.
Right, and got rid of him.
Right. Probably because they knew or had a feeling that the next few years were going to go the way they have with the Yankees and Hicks.
Do you know what a great deal that is to get Buxton at that price? Because he is hurt, and they finally got him to accept guaranteed money at much lower than what he'd be. This guy could be a star if he stays healthy, and they're gonna bite for Aaron Hicks and all the players that you mentioned. They wouldn't trade him for any of them.
Any of them.
I mean, you'd have to be talking about one of your top prospects like Dominguez and Volpe. You think they're just going to give away Byron Buxton? I know that's the Yankee fans' view of the world. It's not, everybody's not your farm team.
I love it. It's almost as if some of these fans think that they're trading baseball cards. You know, it's not like, well, I'll give you 10 cards for one. You got to get, first of all, the team has to want Hicks. They didn't want him 4 years ago. Why would they want him now for one of their best players? Just got to sweeten the pot. You think that's all it takes? Pour more sugar in the coffee. Maybe somebody will finally drink it.
Now, Carlos Baerga, on his own Instagram post, you know, the former Indian, or used to be the Indian, now Guardian, he is saying that Freddie Freeman is going to sign with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, wow. And we got to see the money.
Holy crap.
I don't criticize, you know, the Dodgers or the Yankees or anybody else, but I'm assuming they overpaid.
I got to tell you, if they get Freddie Freeman, that team's a beast.
I mean, they were already, they're already so deep and young. Freddie Freeman.
You seeing these Tatis Jr. stuff, Michael?
Well, that's an ENN, but go ahead.
I wonder if he even gets paid.
I just, but do you have this? It's worth saying, and it's worth saying again.
Okay.
Somebody asked him when the motorcycle accident happened. He broke his wrist in a motorcycle accident, by the way. His answer was, which one?
Now that's something.
Now, in these contracts of that length and that kind of money, you can't do anything. You certainly can't drive. The Yankees had it in Bernie's contract. He couldn't do it. And when he did it, you're risking your contract. It's a high-risk activity.
And apparently, he's got at least two accidents this offseason.
Wow.
God, it's the one thing that Nancy won't let me do that I want to do so bad. I'd love to ride a motorcycle.
You know, just tell her you're doing it. What's she going to do, leave you?
It's not
not about that.
What is it about? Just do it.
It's about honoring the wishes of somebody that you care about.
No, that doesn't sound like a wish. It sounds like an order.
No, but it's Hold not on. Like it's an order that doesn't make sense.
Right, I'm with Nancy on this.
You're very responsible, Don. You know what? I will get you the motorcycle myself.
No, it's not about not being able to get the motorcycle. It's just about how dangerous it is. And sometimes it's not even your fault. You see what happened to the Alonso family? Right. If that happened to me on a motorcycle, I'm not responding to what happened. They're getting a shovel, and they're scraping me off the road. I think I can do more for my family as a solid human being than a puddle.
You think so?
I'm gonna get you a motorcycle.
You know, I can just see Michael doing that. You know, for like Christmas, all of a sudden the doorbell rings. Yeah. There's a Kawasaki sitting there in the front yard.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll say to Nancy, stop him. Let's see if she stops you.
And I could ride my motorcycle to your house, so I can stay over.
Well, sure, you
a place
could.
To sleep.
Absolutely. Mark in Bayside, Mark.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. You?
I'm hanging in there, son, although this trade has really made my head explode. I'm a good buddy of Butch from New Paltz. And,
love Butch.
We've met over Butch is a great guy. Michael and I have met a few times over the last 25 years. In the bathroom at Michael K's after you and Sterling were done with a broadcast. We discussed Shane Spencer.
Bathroom stalker.
Anyway.
Wow. Bathroom
stalker. I love to talk at the urinal. It's got great – it makes my voice sound great.
Yeah.
Please go on, Mark.
Okay. I have a lot to say. I've been on hold for an hour and a half, but I just want to throw some stuff out there and try to be as succinct as possible.
Sorry,
off to a rough start.
Yeah, it's a rough
start. Do it.
I know.
Do it. Go. Go. Go.
Okay. I don't like this trade. I'm an old school guy unabashedly, but I appreciate what analytics bring to the game. But don't tell me that Gio is a defensive liability at third base. Actually, he's one of the best third basemen, I think, defensively, that the Yankees have had since Nettles. I mean, Brocious was great. But tell me, I've watched this guy for three years.
So was A-Rod.
I don't need – by the time he came I don't know if he was better than Gio.
First of all, Gio's listen, I know you love Gio. Mark, his defensive metrics were not good for some reason. They just weren't.
Well, all right. That's the thing here, man. For years, they trashed Jeter and say he was a defensive liability. Yes, he had challenges going up the middle to his left, but going to his right, there were few that were better. And when the ball was hit to him, he made the play. Okay, I don't believe that Donaldson at 57 years old is the defensive third baseman that Gio is now. And plus, they took on all this money. God, I'll be quick. I want Joey Gallo out of here. He's a three true outcome guy who struck out almost 40% of the time when he was here last year. And why do they think this guy at this stage of his career is going to change his spots? It's not going to happen.
They don't want
we
him
have
to change
too
his
many
spots.
Guys.
They
so
I mean,
how
you
is
just
that
said
help?
You
how is
you,
that helpful?
Well, you just said you're an analytics. You're an old school guy, but you appreciate analytics. He's a three true outcome player, and he happens to be a plus defender. They don't want him to change his spots. He is what he is. They knew they picked up 200 strikeouts with him. That's one of the reasons they got rid of Sanchez. You've got in order, 600 strikeouts. They realize that. That's what they built. That's why in the moves they made, they cut down on strikeouts. The average player in baseball strikes out 24% of the time. Donaldson's at 21%. I believe that Kanafalefa is at like 15%. So they're both under average strikeout percentage. So they realize they have more contact hitters in there to counteract the guys who are going to strike out. They don't want Gallo to change. They want to be more comfortable in New York, probably. They want to be better than he was last year. He wasn't good. Hit under 200. He could hit better than that. But they knew what they were getting. I'm glad that Mark wanted to be succinct. Because I can shudder to think what it would be like if he didn't want to be succinct.
Well,
long-winded. He'd get his own show on the station.
You know, it would be a hurricane.
Well, hey.
But he did salvage the call. It was a good call.
How did he salvage it?
Well, he asked some questions that at least weren't just, you know, they weren't just rambling.
And it generated a nice little back and forth after the fact.
There you go. See?
That's all you can ask for, really.
Okay.
Scientists aren't calling, Michael. But this is what we do.
1-800-919-3776. Peter has been furiously prepared. By the way, Peter, you're letting your hair grow out. It's not tight
lose.
Like it usually is.
You won.
Is it really that? Is it long? Is it really long?
Because what I'm seeing right now, on Yes, is a head of hair that would be a full head of hair if you let it grow out. It would just be back in the power alley like I am.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
you really
I don't know why you just don't grow it out.
You really think that?
I mean, look at the hair on your arms. You're like an ape. I mean,
that's not how it works, Michael.
He's very hirsute, Don. Very hirsute.
What's hirsute mean?
Hairy.
And I'm looking at the picture. I don't see that much hair on
him. And other than showing off, why would hairy not be the right word to say?
Right.
Showing off is the reason. You're right. Showing off. That I know the word hirsute.
And also, social media is killing Peter. How busy can you possibly be not to text someone? Why couldn't you text Dave, happy birthday?
How was I supposed to know it was his birthday?
Well, that's a different argument. But we were saying you were too busy.
It was all over Twitter.
Now we're talking. I wasn't on Twitter on Saturday because I was out and about and having a good time.
You weren't on Twitter. The whole full day, you never opened up Twitter. I don't believe it. I'm going to call you a liar.
Let's see if I tweeted on Saturday.
Do we have to hold? Can we come back?
Really.
And
you all right,
tell
fine.
Us?
You can keep going.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.